We are doing Tanya 200 in honor of the 200th anniversary of the first publication of the Tanya. We're up to chapter 27, and just to summarize briefly, in chapter 26, the Rebbe began a new subject, and that is a treatment on the theme of sadness and joy. The Rebbe establishes that sadness is not at all acceptable in the service of God. That in order to do what we are created to do, in order to serve God properly, or in the struggle between good and evil, being sad almost guarantees that we're going to fail. The Rebbe uses an analogy with martial arts, that the victory in a contest goes not to the one who is technically stronger, but to the one who is quicker, more agile, more alert. And the same is true also in the spiritual battle. So although the godly soul is certainly stronger than our animal soul, yet if we are not in a light mood, in a joyful mood, that additional strength will not help the godly soul to win in the contest. In fact, it will be defeated. Victory goes to the one who is light on their feet, light in their mood, and quick and agile. This is a radical idea, certainly at the time when the Rebbe presented it 200 years ago, where it was assumed that to be religious, to be pious, to be holy, you had to be semi-depressed. You had to be serious. You had to be joyless, because joy was considered frivolous and reckless and dangerous to your moral health. So when the Rebbe says that sadness is completely unacceptable in the service of God, this is a radical idea, and the Rebbe defends it and explains those verses that seem to be indicating that sadness is beneficial. And the Rebbe says that beneficial means that it itself is not of value, but that some benefit can be derived from it. So where it says that sadness brings a benefit, it means that the sadness itself is a negative thing, but it can bring a benefit. And what is the benefit? The benefit is joy. That there's a greater joy after the sadness, that the joy is increased, not only more appreciated, but actually increased after there's been a moment of sadness. But the sadness is certainly not a way of serving God, and it should be eliminated as quickly as possible. Then the Rebbe offers advice. How do you get rid of sadness? Sadness is a heaviness of the heart, which produces a sluggishness or a laziness in our behavior. The heaviness of the heart comes from concern, from worry, from heaviness of conscience or thought. How do we get rid of sadness? Well, it depends on what is causing the sadness. So if the sadness is coming from worldly problems, a person is sad because of events in life that he cannot control, like the lack of health, for example, or worried about children, having children, the health of the children, or the ability to support the family, to make a living, to have what to eat. All of these things, although they are valid concerns, not frivolous at all, yet, if they're causing sadness, that sadness must be dismissed, and you have to get rid of it by defining the event, or redefining the event, where we first assume that if there's a problem with health, or there's a problem with sustenance, that is a bad thing, and this bad thing is causing us to feel bad, which is causing the sadness. The Rebbe explains the two channels through which God provides to his creatures. One channel is called the revealed world, the other is called the concealed world. There are times when God is being obvious, and there are times when God is not obvious. When the kindness, when the influence, the giving from above to the creation is on the lower level, meaning on a level that creation or the creatures can appreciate and understand, it's a kindness that fits our definition of kindness, then we perceive this as an obvious good. But when God is providing on his level, which we don't understand, which doesn't fit our definition of what is good for us or by our standard, then that kindness, although it's a greater kindness, is experienced as a negative, as a painful, as a bad thing. So the Talmud says that just as we thank God for the good things, we should also thank him for the bad. Now, although there is a blessing that we make for, God forbid, for bad things that happen, yet the comparison is strange. Just as we thank God for good things, we should thank him for bad things. And the Gemara explains that what that means is not that we say the same thing or make the same blessing. It's that we accept both graciously. We obviously accept the good things graciously, but those are the things that we define as good by our definition, by our standard. When God is being kinder than what we understand, then we describe that as bad. But that we should accept with the same graciousness as the good, because it too is for the good. In other words, although it is not our standard of good, but it is good. In fact, it's a greater good. It's a good on his level rather than a good on our level, which, of course, we don't always understand. So what the Rebbe is saying is that if we rethink the nature of these events in our lives, which we can't control, then we have to define them as a hidden good, because no evil comes from above. And in God's world, there is nothing that is bad. There is only the obvious good and the hidden good. Bad would mean when something happens that shouldn't have happened. But anything that happens necessarily, anything that is justified, even if it's painful, even if it's sad, it can't be called bad. So since nothing bad happens in the world, nothing happens in creation that isn't meant to happen, that isn't supposed to happen. So when these events that are making us sad do occur, we have to explain to ourselves, reason in our own minds, how there is no cause for sadness at all, because nothing bad has happened. Now that's useful advice if we're talking about physical events. Physical events that we don't create. What about sadness that comes not from worldly concern about health and wealth, but concerns about our own morality? Here we can't say this too is for the good, because when we choose to sin, that is the one thing in the universe that happens and shouldn't happen. So that can correctly be identified as something bad. So we can't say nothing bad happened. Here there is cause for concern, but how do we manage that concern without getting sad, without losing the energy of the heart and emotion? The Rebbe says that if our concern is from sins we committed in the past, we have to consider the following. Why, all of a sudden, are we feeling regret? Why are we suddenly feeling bad over a sin that we committed in the past? And in general, how does this whole regret and repentance experience work? We sin because in our mind, we justified that behavior. Or it was, we found it so irresistible that we simply couldn't reason our way out of it. A while later, we regret that act. What changed? What happened? Which of the two is true? The regret or the desire to sin? So if a person finds himself saddened in the middle of the day, while he's busy doing whatever it is a person does, and all of a sudden he feels this heaviness and this sadness because of sins committed in the past, this can't possibly be a true regret. It certainly is not tshuva. It is not a return to innocence. Because what it would take to experience a return to innocence is a reconsidering, a realignment in our relationship with God. After all, sinning means violating someone's interest or will. It's not correct, technically, to say to sin against ourselves. In order to sin, you have to violate a commandment. And in order to have a commandment, there has to be a commander who cares about these things. And so when we regret a sin, it's not enough to feel ashamed of the behavior. We have to have reconsidered our relationship with the commander. Prior to the reconsideration, when we sinned, we had a certain attitude towards God, towards the commander. It wasn't a very respectful one. It wasn't a very serious one. We took his will lightly, and that enabled us to sin. Gave us the room to exercise our freedom of choice and violate his commandment. When we rethink our relationship with him, when we regret the loss of that relationship, or when we consider the inappropriateness or the unfairness of our behavior in the relationship, in that he has been good and deserving and we have been careless and acting inappropriately, that kind of rethinking can produce a true regret, so that there is a good chance that the behavior will change now and we will not again sin because we have a different attitude now. But if the sadness occurs spontaneously, we hadn't been thinking about our relationship with God, we hadn't been thinking about God at all, we were busy going about our business, where is this sadness coming from? This is not a healthy sadness. This is not a worthy sadness. In fact, it's coming from the same negative place that the sin originally came from. It's coming from our evil inclination. The evil inclination will sometimes make us sad about our sins because it serves the purpose of evil. When a person is sad, he's more likely to sin again. So it could all be part of that dragging down rather than a turning of a new leaf or a true regret and repentance. If the sadness occurs not during our business hours, but during the time when we're trying to serve God, when we're studying Torah or praying, here it's not enough to say this is not valid. There's a problem. We're trying to pray. We're trying to do something holy. What do we consider? What do we think to get rid of that sadness? So here the Rebbe says, if you're trying to pay attention and have proper intention in the prayer or in the learning, you have to tell yourself that the sadness, even if it were valid, is not appropriate at the moment. Because the right way to regret sins is to find the appropriate time, a conducive time, in which you can reconsider your relationship with God, and in the new light of that relationship, you will regret the past behavior. But this spontaneous regret is not a holy one. and therefore the response to the sadness that is a spiritual one, sadness over sins, whether it occurs during business hour or it occurs during the time when we're trying to serve God, the response to it is, this is not the way to do it, this is not proper regret, this is not the time or the place. And proper regret takes a certain time and a certain place that has to be predetermined, that has to be purposefully set up and pursued so that we get a really good result from the regret. Otherwise, it's just a lifeless sadness that doesn't produce any improvement at all. Chapter 27. Here the Rebbe changes the concern from one of past sins to one of distasteful moral condition. The sadness is not coming from some sin committed in the past. The sadness is coming from the fact that a person finds himself mired in unholiness. He's plagued by unholy thoughts and unholy feelings, and he can't shake them off. And so he is saddened by his present moral condition rather than a sin committed in the past. Now, the previous advice doesn't apply. You can't say this is not the time for it, because the problem is in the present. It's not a sin committed in the past, which we can put off and say, I'll fix that at the right time. Here's a problem going on constantly and presently, and it's saddening us because we're ashamed or embarrassed about our personality or about our condition in our morality. Now, certainly, this kind of sadness has got to be virtuous. This has got to be part of being pious, because if you're not saddened by it, then your standards, your moral fiber is not very strong. So you've got to be saddened by the fact that there's unholy stuff going on, even if it's not a sin. And yet the Rebbe says, even this sadness should be dismissed, and you should get rid of it as quickly as possible. And how do we do that? By considering the fact that this sadness is illegitimate, and we have no reason to be sad at all except out of arrogance. So surprisingly, the Rebbe turns this sadness, which seemed like a great virtue, a piety, he turns it into an act of arrogance. There are those saintly people who are not plagued by unholy thoughts. And the reason they don't have unholy thoughts is because they have no unholy instincts. Unholiness does not appeal to them. It's not there in their makeup, in their heart. And because it's not there in their heart, it never rises from the heart to the mind as a thought or a distraction. Now, this person who does have unholy thoughts and is saddened by it is out of touch with his own reality. He's misjudged himself. Because a person isn't saddened by the fact that he doesn't have things that are way beyond his reach. We are saddened when we think we could have something and it turns out that we can't. But that which is way beyond our league, out of reach, doesn't sadden us. When the person who has unholy thoughts is saddened by it, it's because for some reason he has come to believe that he is somewhere in the same league as the righteous, as the tzaddik, who is not plagued by unholy thoughts. And when the unholy thoughts continue, he is discouraged, he is despondent, he is saddened, because he thought he was on the verge of becoming a tzaddik. And the unholy thoughts prove that he hasn't become a tzaddik. And that is coming from arrogance, because the truth is that the distance between the tzaddik the righteous, the saintly person, and the average person is so large, is so great, that the average person should not even have dreams of becoming saintly, of becoming a tzaddik. It's a gift given from above to the unique individuals. It is not for the average person. In fact, the average person should be striving to remain a beinoni, which is a person who does not sin, even though he has unholy thoughts. He should be striving to remain a beinoni and not to slip back and get careless and commit the sin, rather than reject the thought as soon as he recognizes it as an unholy one. So it's an arrogance, actually. It's a non-realistic expectation that he had of himself, that he was on the verge of being saintly, and then he would be free of unholy thoughts. And what is the purpose of a person who is striving to be good, and in behavior, in fact, is good? He will not sin. He will not commit any of the 365 negative commandments, even in thought. So once he realizes that the thought he's having is an unholy one, he resists it, he rejects it, he rids himself of it, and yet they keep coming back. What is the purpose of this? The purpose is that every time a person refuses an unholy instinct, every time a person refuses an unholy thought, he subdues all the unholiness in creation. And this causes a greater pleasure to God than other forms of praise, other forms of service. The tzaddik can't do this, because the tzaddik doesn't come in contact with unholy impulses. It's only the non-tzaddik who has these impulses, who has the opportunity to fulfill the obligation of not being distracted by the thoughts of your heart. This is a commandment. And it certainly does not apply to the saintly whose heart does not distract them. And so it must be directed to people like us who have unholy thoughts, and our job, our mission, and our purpose is to refuse it and to subdue it so that all the unholiness in the world becomes weaker and more submissive to the godly. In fact, there's a quote in Job, where Job says to God, "You who created the righteous and the sinful." And the Rebbe had asked the question, God doesn't create the righteous and the sinful. Isn't that freedom of choice? So here we have the answer. Job was not talking about sinning or not sinning. In that, we have freedom of choice. But in creation, God created two kinds of people. Before we get to our freedom of choice, there are two kinds of people. There are those who have unholy thoughts. They come in contact with unholy impulses, and it is their job to subdue it. And then there are those who don't. They don't have that job. That's not their mission. They don't experience unholy thoughts or unholy impulses. This is what he meant when he said, God, you created the righteous and the sinful. The righteous are those who don't have those thoughts, and the sinful are those who experience sinful thoughts as part of their creation. They were created that way. It's not something they can choose, and it's not something they can get rid of. The thoughts occur to them because temptation exists, and they experience it. The freedom of choice kicks in once they realize that this is an unholy thought. What are they going to do with it? They can either pursue it and be hospitable to this unholy thought, or they can refuse it and reject it. That's their freedom of choice. So there are three kinds of people because of freedom of choice, but only two kinds of created beings. So God created two types: the ones who have unholy thoughts, the ones who don't. In addition, with our freedom of choice, we can choose to not only experience involuntary unholy thoughts, but we can also accept them, pursue them, and even act on them and actually sin. That would create a third category. That would be the sinner. But God didn't create a sinner. He only created sinful thoughts, which the average person has. And so the Rebbe says, we shouldn't be terribly saddened by the occurrence of these involuntary and uninvited thoughts. On the contrary, we should be glad to fulfill successfully the instruction and the commandment to not be tempted by those thoughts. And in doing this, we are providing for God a greater pleasure and a greater revelation of godliness in the world than the saintly and the righteous who don't come in contact with the unholy. Because turning the unholy into holiness is the ultimate objective. And those who come in contact with the unholy and subdue the unholy, those are the ones on the front line, so to speak, who are accomplishing this mission and this purpose of subduing the unholy to the point where it will eventually be transformed into actual holiness. And yet the Rebbe says we shouldn't be terribly saddened. A little sadness is appropriate. Because, again, if we had no sadness at all, if we become too comfortable with unholy thoughts and impulses, then we become lax and we become careless and something is lost in our moral fiber. But the sadness of it should be dismissed immediately because it is invalid. We have no reason for sadness. It's part of our service. It's part of the way that we elevate the world towards godliness.